Very special guest today. His name is Dr. Walter E. Williams. He is an American economist, commentator, and academic. He is a professor of economics at George Mason University, syndicated columnist, author of over 150 publications, authored a number of books, including an autobiography entitled Up From the Projects, a frequent guest on Fox, CNN, and many other shows. Dr. Williams, it is a pleasure to have you with us today, sir.
And good morning to you.
All right. Now, tell us for our listeners, why do you believe so much in liberal ideology is supported by the African-American community?
Why do I believe?
Why do you believe that the liberal ideology is supported by the African-American community? Why do you believe that's the case?
Well, I don't have much of an answer for you, although black Americans, historically, black Americans have been the party of Lincoln, namely Republicans, up until,
right,
I guess, World War II. And I believe that the Republicans might have made some strategic errors as being, with President Nixon's Southern strategy.
I see.
And that might be part of it, although the most of the problems that... If you had to identify a political party that blacks have had problems with throughout our entire history, it would have to be the Democrat Party. Mm. I mean, the people in the Ku Klux Klan, they were Democrats. Bull Connors was a Democrat. George Wallace was a Democrat, and even Senator Byrd was a Democrat. Mm. And so it's not much of a case historically of saying that Democrats and liberals have been on the side of blacks.
Now, in your book, Race and Economics, how much can be blamed on discrimination? For our listeners, tell them why you wrote the book and the context.
Well, I think that that far too often people say that the problems that black Americans face are rooted in discrimination. Well, I'm not saying that discrimination does not exist, but discrimination does not explain all that people say that it explains. In terms of opportunities, if you ask the question, I have one chapter on there on occupational licensing, and you say, well, what does it take for a person to be able to get into the taxicab business and maybe earn $40,000 or $50,000 a year? He doesn't require a lot of capital. You buy a car and you buy insurance. But in some cities, you have to have a license. And in New York City, the license has been as high as $1 million to own and operate one taxi.
Mm.
And
how much?
$1 million. At the time I wrote the book, it was $700,000.
So
gone up.
Let me kind of clarify this for our listeners. So what you're saying is, because of the regulation and the cost to get involved in business, it costs in today's dollars about $1 million to get in, we'll have one taxi in New York City. Is that what you're saying?
That is absolutely right. Mm. And you see the justification, the argument for that is that what that does, it restricts the number of people who can drive a taxi in New York.
Right.
And therefore, the people who are already in the taxi cab business can charge higher prices. And so therefore, they support the medallion system, the licensing procedure. Then there's another devastating impact of laws on black, and that is the minimum wage law.
Hmm.
And you see, if you see the effect of the minimum wage law, not the intention of the minimum wage law, because for the most part in the United States, the intention behind the support for the minimum wage law is quite noble, but you have to ask the effect. And you see the effect of the minimum wage law if you put yourself in the place of an employer, and you must pay $7.25 an hour to no matter whom you hire, plus mandated fringes, but let's just stick with $7.25,
right,
current minimum. Well, you might ask yourself, does it pay, if I must pay $7.25 an hour to no matter whom I hire, does it pay me to hire a person who is so unfortunate so as to have skills that would enable him to only add $4 or $5 worth of value per hour to my output?
Mm.
Well, most employers would view that as hiring such a person as a losing economic proposition.
Sure.
And so what the minimum wage law does, it discriminates against low-skilled people. And who are the low-skilled people in our society? Well, for the most part, they're teenagers. They don't have the maturity and experience of adults. So the minimum wage has the greatest impact on teenagers in general, and then particularly black teenagers, because they not only share the handicaps of teenagers in general, but they also share additional handicaps of attending grossly fraudulent schools in our inner cities and coming from broken homes and bad neighborhoods. So it would have a doubly negative effect on black teenagers. So there are many, many laws that handicap Americans in general and black people in particular that have nothing to do with racial discrimination.
Interesting. In your last comments there, there's so many different things we could chase. But here's a question. I'm going to skip down my questions here. But you're quoted as saying that you were a radical in college, more supportive of Malcolm X than Martin Luther King. What caused you to change your outlook on American life, and when did that occur?
Well, I'm still a radical, and a radical in the sense that
sounds like a good one, though.
That any American who believes in individual liberty and private property and strict adherence to the United States Constitution is today a radical, because most people, most Americans, have utter contempt for the principles of individual liberty. Most Americans think that one person should be forcibly used to serve the purposes of another. Now, you say, well, what do I mean by that? Well, if you look at two-thirds to three-quarters of all federal spending can be characterized in the following fashion. That is where Congress takes the rightful property of one American and gives it to another American to whom it does not belong. And whether you're talking about Medicaid, Medicare, food stamps, bailouts for businesses, and the list goes on and on, most Americans believe in that stuff, and I find it offensive. I find the idea of taking what belongs to one person and giving it to another to whom it does not belong, I find it offensive, and that makes me radical.
Yeah, they call that theft, actually.
Yeah, it's legalized theft.
Exactly. With that in mind, and that was spoken very eloquently, like a college professor of economics would. What is your opinion of President Obama's presidency to date?
Well, I think that his opinion is probably going to go down as a failed presidency along the lines of Jimmy Carter, but I think the President Obama's presidency and the problems that he's had and the problems that our nation has says far less about President Obama than the American people. Because if you ask yourself the question, this is the first time in our history that a person could have been elected to the highest office of the land who has a long time known associations with people who hate our country, such as Reverend Wright and the Ayers and the Bernadette and the Underground, the Weathermen, and these kind of people who have utter contempt for the values of our country. That says something about the American people, of the American people who would elect such a person to the highest office of the land.
What do you think it says exactly? What does it say about the American people that actually voted for that person? They dissatisfied with America. They don't like the system. They want hope and change. They want something for free.
Well,
they want socialism. What does it actually say about them?
Well, I think a good part of the vote that Obama got was white people relieving their feelings of guilt for horrible injustices that have been suffered against black Americans throughout our history.
Sure.
And matter of fact, if you go to my webpage, it's walterewilliams.com, I have a method of dealing with this guilt. It's a gift. And it's a gift, and it's a amnesty and pardon to all Americans of European ancestry, granted by me, for both their own grievances and those of their forebears against my people. And the reason why I want to forgive all the white people is so that they stop feeling guilty and stop acting like damn fools.
All right, we are talking to Dr. Walter E. Williams, professor of economics at George Mason University, and we'll be with him again right after the break. All right. Welcome back to the Ty J. Young Show. The theme, as always, is growth with protection, because it's not how much you make. It is how much you get to keep. I'm Ty Young, your host. With me today, as always, my co-host, Steve Rodriguez. And today's show is brought to you by Ty J. Young, Inc. If you would like your money protected against losses, you'd like to earn a reasonable rate of return, you'd like to go up with the stock market, lock in your gains, and when the market goes down, you don't lose anything. If that's what you want for your money, and Steve, I don't know why anybody wouldn't want that for your money. If you want that, get the Investor's Kit. All you need to do is dial 888-559-7388. That's 888-559-7388. Ask for the Investor's Kit. There's no charge, and there'll be a DVD. Just watch the DVD. You'll learn how to, again, have your money protected, achieve a reasonable rate of return, and have the security in knowing that if the stock market goes in half, you don't have to worry about losing like you may have in 2008. All right, back to business. We are talking today to Dr. Walter E. Williams, professor of economics at George Mason University. And sir, as I was preparing for this interview today, there's one question that I wanted to ask you. I wanted to get your opinion on that. There was one question in particular, and here it is. France just elected a socialist, a pure socialist. And what does that say about the French people? Is it they're just trying to get that, they're trying to squeeze the last bit of something for nothing, or redistribution of wealth out, or what does that actually say about France, Europe in a bigger sense, and from a helicopter view of the world at this point?
Well, I think that one of the suggestions is that they may view reality as optional. That there's some real circumstances, and they're saying, well, let's get rid of austerity. I mean, you cannot get blood from a turnip,
right?
And they think that they can get blood out of a turnip, just like you people in the United States. And they think, well, gee, let's keep on spending, but let's tax the rich. And rich people did not become rich by being stupid. And so they're
right.
Going to respond to the taxes, maybe by leaving, hiding their money, and doing all other kinds of things. But France and Europe and Greece and all these other countries that have been on the spending binge, they're not going to be able to tax their way out of it.
Now, the polls have right now Romney winning by 1 or 2 points, but the odds makers in Las Vegas right now have it 60-40 Obama. My question to you is, from an economic standpoint, what can we expect if we, God forbid, get another term with President Obama?
Well, I mean, he'll have, as he was telling Russians, I forget the diplomat for Russia, but it was Putin's man.
Right, right.
When he gets reelected, he'll be able to be more flexible, to use that kind of language. That is, he can do things without worrying about reelection. And so I would expect the utter worst for our nation. That is, we'll just have greater government spending, and I think that the Republicans that are in Congress, they don't have much guts to go up against the guy, because the Republicans can do many, many things since they control the House, but they are unwilling to do it. That is, the president cannot appropriate a single dime unless he gets authority from Congress. And so, but the Republican Congress, they're giving him, they're kind of going along with the big spending, because the Congress has the power, and I wouldn't want anybody to say, well, gee, there's certain mandated expenditures. No. Congress has the power of the purse strings, and if they don't appropriate something, it cannot be done.
Now, you're a professor of economics. If you're advising Mitt Romney at this point, and you know, in the election, and let's assume that he gets elected, what would you advise him to? What advise him to say to be elected, and then ultimately in his first 100 days in office, what would you recommend that he do to get our economy squared away?
Well, whatever I'd recommend, he would not do.
Really,
or no politician with any brains would do, and that would. That is just stop doing what they've been doing.
Right.
That is, a president, when he walks into office, he can blame a lot of things on Congress, because he just does. He can't tell Congress what to do.
Right.
But he does have the power of executive orders. Now, if I were the United States president, I think that my first act of business would be to rescind all executive orders.
Maybe it wouldn't be so bad to have you as president.
No, I mean, to become president, anybody to become president of the United States would, or at least I would have to rise above principle and do the right thing.
All right. And I'd love to get your comment on this. This week, I was watching one of the morning shows on Fox News, and there was an African-American pastor came on, and he had said that he was very offended that the president came out in favor of gay marriage. He's very offended that Obamacare is forcing religious institutions to provide contraception against their beliefs. He was very offended. He went on a list of about six or seven or eight things that he was very, very offended by. And then he ended by saying, I'm still supporting President Obama because we think he's the best choice. From a racial standpoint, I mean, is that all it is? Is it about race to somebody like that, do you think? Or is...
I think it's a very, very unfortunate attitude. And when Obama was running, I wrote a column in saying that, well, gee, you know, black people cannot afford a stumble bum as our first black president. And this looks like, you know, in 1947, when Jackie Robinson was entering the major leagues, black right. people could not afford a stumble bum. However, as a result of Jackie Robinson, it opened up opportunities for many, many other people. Now, I'm all too afraid that a future black, 10, 15 years running for office, he might have to carry some of the baggage of Obama.
Sadly, I think you might be right about that. All right, we're talking today to Dr. Walter E. Williams, professor of economics at George Mason University. You'd mentioned your website address earlier today, so white people, if they had guilt, they could get a pardon. What's that website address again?
It's WalterEWilliams.com, and if you go to the top of the page, all the way to the right, and click on gift.
All right, the gift. And also, you've got a number of books out there, including your autobiography, Up From the Projects. If folks want to buy your book, want to find out more about you, do they go to that same website?
No, you can go to the same website, or in terms of books, they can just go to Amazon.com.
Amazon.com, just look under your name, Dr. Walter E. Williams, they can find your books.
Yes, right, yes.
And then plus
on my web page for the ladies out there, it's a very handsome photo of me, too.
Oh, really? All right. What we'll do is we'll put a link on the Ty J. Young Show website. They can go directly to your website. Sir, it's been an honor and a privilege to have you today. You're a great American. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for inviting me.
All right.
Thank you, guys.
All right. Thank you now. All right.